Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We were never eager for war. We made every effort to prevent war. Let me emphasize that, despite our mistrust, we negotiated and wanted the negotiations to yield results. We were also ready to present our program in the sixth round, but they did not leave room for this matter.
Fighting between Israel and Iran has entered its fourth day after Israel launched a sweeping, unprovoked attack to start a war between the two most powerful militaries in the Middle East. The attack began as a new round of negotiations between Iran and the United States were set to take place over Iran's nuclear program. We'll speak with Iranian-Israeli activists Orly Noy in Jerusalem and Ali Vaez of the International Crisis Group. Then, no kings.
I'm 16, and I'm out here because I want a future. I am carrying a sign that says no kings because I believe that in America, we are a democracy.
Millions of people marched in at least 2,000 protests across the United States as tanks rolled through the streets of Washington, D.C. for President Trump's 79th birthday. And then to Minneapolis, where a former Minnesota House Speaker was gunned down with her husband, another state senator and his wife shot multiple times. The alleged assassin, who was dressed as a police officer, has been caught in the largest manhunt in Minnesota history.
A moment in this country where we watch violence erupt. This cannot be the norm. It cannot be the way that we deal with our political differences.
The executioner's hit list included 70 names of Democratic lawmakers and abortion providers or pro-choice advocates. We'll speak with Patricia Torres-Ray, a former Minnesota state senator who worked closely with Minnesota former House Speaker Melissa Hortman, who was killed, and State Senator John Hoffman shot. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Fighting between Israel and Iran entered a fourth day after Israel launched a sweeping, unprovoked attack to start a war between the two most powerful militaries in the Middle East. Since Friday, Israel's assassinated nine Iranian nuclear scientists, along with key figures in Iran's military and intelligence leadership, including the intelligence chief and deputy intelligence chief of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, who was killed Sunday. Earlier today, Israel struck the command center of Iran's Quds Force. Iran's health ministry reports a total of 224 people have been killed and 1,400 injured in Israeli attacks in Iran, with the majority of victims reported to be civilians. Iran responded by launching a wave of missile attacks on Tel Aviv, Haifa, and other Israeli cities, killing at least 24 people and injuring more than 500. One missile reportedly fell near the U.S. embassy. Israel attacked Iran Friday, just 2 days before the U.S. and Iran were scheduled to hold another round of nuclear talks. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi accused Israel of sabotaging the talks.
The Israeli government is neither seeking any type of agreement on the nuclear issue nor looking for negotiations or diplomacy. Attacking Iran in the midst of nuclear negotiations demonstrates Israel's disagreement with any form of negotiation. What has transpired now is precisely an attempt to sabotage diplomacy and negotiations, and we regret that the United States took part in it.
The Iranian foreign minister also accused the United States of supporting Israel's bombardment of Iran. One Israeli official told the Jerusalem Post, quote, there was full and complete coordination with the Americans. During an interview on Fox News, the Israeli prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, said Israel's war in Iran could lead to a regime change. He was questioned by Brett Baer.
So is regime change part of the effort here? could certainly be the result because the Iran regime is very weak.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. After a two-day manhunt, authorities in Minnesota have detained a 57-year-old man accused of assassinating the Democratic state lawmaker Melissa Hortman and her husband in their home early Saturday. The suspect, Vance Belter, is also accused of shooting and wounding State Senator John Hoffman and his wife at their home. He was shot 9 times, she 8. Authorities say Belter carried out the shootings while disguised as a police officer. A hit list written by the gunman was later discovered. It contained the names of about 70 other potential targets, including other lawmakers and Planned Parenthood centers. Authorities also found flyers for Saturday's No Kings rallies, prompting many organizers in Minnesota to cancel the protests due to safety concerns, since at the time he was still on the loose. Belter has been described as a supporter of Donald Trump and a longtime opponent of abortion and LGBTQ rights. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz spoke Sunday night and denounced political violence.
A moment in this country where we watch violence erupt, this cannot be the norm. It cannot be the way that we deal with our political differences. Now's the time for us to recommit to the core values of this country.
Governor Walz has also paid tribute to Melissa Hortman, who'd served as Speaker of the House in Minnesota from 2019 till earlier this year. Her legislative victories included codifying the right to abortion in the state constitution and providing free school lunches to children. More than 5 million people took part in No Kings Day protests Saturday and the largest day of action against President Trump since his return to office. Protests were held in over 2,100 cities and towns. In Los Angeles, 200,000 people marched just days after Trump deployed the National Guard and Marines. In Philadelphia, over 100,000 people took to the streets. Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin of Maryland addressed the crowd.
Yes, Donald, the Declaration and the Constitution were written by people who wanted to stop criminal bosses like you from taking state power.
Massive No Kings Day protests were also held in New York, San Diego, Chicago, Seattle, and other communities across the country. Devin Johnson took part in the protests in Atlanta.
I don't recognize our country anymore. I don't believe that parents should be taken away from their kids. No one is legal on stolen land. And when our president does not listen to our courts, then we're in a pretty bad spot.
We'll go to the No Kings protests later in the broadcast. In Salt Lake City, Utah, one person was killed after a gunman armed with an AR-15-style rifle ran into the crowd at a No Kings Day protest. A designated peacekeeper working at the march fired shots at the gunman, but one of those shots fatally struck a peaceful protester, Afa Alu, who was a prominent Samoan fashion designer who once appeared on the show Project Runway. The size of the No Kings Day protest dwarfed the turnout of a military parade held in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, which was President Trump's 79th birthday and the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. The parade reportedly cost $45 million and up to $100 million. On the eve of the military parade, dozens of veterans were arrested, including seniors in their 80s, after a group of activists with Veterans for Peace and About Face took to the steps of the U.S. Capitol to demand an end to wars abroad and on U.S. city streets. In Gaza, at least 20 Palestinians seeking aid were killed earlier today near an aid distribution site in Rafah. Over 200 others were wounded. Officials in Gaza say Israeli attacks in recent weeks have killed more than 300 Palestinians seeking aid from the shadowy new U.S.-backed Israeli operation known as the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. An additional 2,000 Palestinians have been wounded near the aid sites. On Friday, a U.N. official said the new aid operation has been a, quote, failure from a humanitarian standpoint. This is Dr. Ahmed Afara, a doctor in Khan Yunis.
Example for the people, for the innocent people, they are going to the distribution aid and they were targeted by gunshot by snipers. As you see, it is a gunshot in the head. The brain matter is out. This is one of the most catastrophic and serious complication of the distribution aid.
This comes as activists taking part in the global march to Gaza have been violently blocked by Egyptian authorities as they've attempted to make their way to the Rafah border crossing with Gaza. Since the international effort to break the Israeli siege launched last week, members of the convoy have been beaten, arrested, had their passports confiscated, and have been deported. Reports on the ground say thugs paid by the government of Abdel Fattah el-Sisi have attacked the convoy. The international group of thousands include members of the parliament from Ireland, Turkey, and South Africa. A video emerged over the weekend of the Turkish MP Faruk Dinç with a bloodied head following an attack on the convoy. Security forces in Libya have also blocked the activists. Massive marches in solidarity with the convoy and with Gaza took place over the weekend, including in Belgium, France, Brazil, the Netherlands, where about 150,000 rallied at The Hague. Meanwhile, the last three Gaza Freedom Flotilla activists in Israeli custody have been deported to Jordan. A federal judge Friday refused to release Columbia graduate Mahmoud Khalil from an immigration jail in rural Louisiana. Earlier last week, U.S. District Judge Michael Farbiars in New Jersey ruled the government's continued imprisonment of Khalil over his Palestinian rights activism would be found unconstitutional, raising hope for his release. But Judge Farbiars did still accept the Justice Department's rationale for keeping Khalil locked up for alleged fraud on his 2024 green card application over what it claims were undeclared affiliations. Mahmoud Khalil's lawyer called the Trump administration's tactics targeting Khalil unjust, shocking, and disgraceful. President Trump's threatening to expand immigration raids in Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York and other cities, targeting what he called, quote, the core of the Democrat power center, unquote. In a post on Truth Social, Trump ordered ICE officers to, quote, do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history, unquote. In Vermont, advocates are demanding the release of two immigrant justice leaders who were detained over the weekend. Jose Ignacio Nacho de la Cruz was driving his stepdaughter, Heidi Perez, when they were pulled over by Border Patrol agents who smashed their car window, violently arrested the two organizers. Both members of the farm workers-led group Migrant Justice now face deportation. De la Cruz has long been an advocate for workers' rights in the dairy and construction industries and has helped push for immigrant rights legislation in Vermont. Heidi Perez just graduated high school and has advocated for higher education for immigrant students in Vermont. The Trump administration is considering significantly expanding its travel ban to include nationals from another 36 countries. That's according to The Washington Post, which obtained a memo issued by the State Department. The countries that could face a full or partial ban include U.S. allies like Egypt, as well as another two dozen African nations, including the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burkina Faso, and South Sudan. And here in New York City, early voting has begun to select a new mayor. The two frontrunners in the heated Democratic primary are progressive assembly member Zohran Mamdani and former governor Andrew Cuomo, who resigned in 2021 in disgrace in the wake of an official report detailing sexual harassment of at least 11 women while he was in office. Last week, Mamdani and Brad Lander, the city's controller, who's been polling in third place, co-endorsed each other in New York City's ranked choice voting as part of an effort to ensure Cuomo stays out of office. Zohran Mamdani blasted Cuomo's record as governor during a televised debate last week.
To Mr. Cuomo, I have never had to resign in disgrace. I have never cut Medicaid. I have never stolen hundreds of millions of dollars from the MTA. I have never hounded the 13 women who credibly accused me of sexual harassment. I have never sued for their gynecological records. And I have never done those things because I am not you, Mr. Cuomo. And furthermore, the name is Mamdani. M-A-M-D-A-N-I. You should learn how to say it because we got to get it right.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Fighting between Israel and Iran's entered a fourth day after Israel launched a sweeping, unprovoked attack. Since Friday, Israel's assassinated 9 Iranian nuclear scientists and much of Iran's military and intelligence leadership, including the intelligence chief and deputy intelligence chief of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, who was they were killed on Sunday. Earlier today, Israel struck the command center of Iran's Quds Force. Iran's health ministry reports a total of 224 people have been killed in the Israeli attacks. Iran has responded by launching a wave of missile attacks on Tel Aviv, Haifa, and other Israeli cities, killing at least 24 people and injuring more than 500. One missile reportedly fell near the U.S. embassy. Israel attacked Iran Friday, just 2 days before the U.S. and Iran were scheduled to hold another round of nuclear talks. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi accused Israel of sabotaging the talks.
The Israeli government is neither seeking any type of agreement on the nuclear issue nor looking for negotiations or diplomacy. Attacking Iran in the midst of nuclear negotiations demonstrates Israel's disagreement with any form of negotiation. What has transpired now is precisely an attempt to sabotage diplomacy and negotiations, and we regret that the United States took part in it.
This comes as President Trump and other world leaders arrive in Calgary, Canada, ahead of the G7 summit. The G7 includes the U.S., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United Kingdom. The Israel-Iran conflict is expected to be topping the agenda. President Trump's posting about the conflict on his social media platform, Truth Social, where he's denied any U.S. involvement in the attacks and said his administration remains committed to a diplomatic resolution on Iran's nuclear program, but then said something about the sides having to continue to fight. We're joined now by two guests. Orly Noy is an Iranian-Israeli political activist and editor of the Hebrew language news site Local Call. She's also chair of B'Tselem's executive board. Her new piece for 972 is headlined, Israel's greatest threat isn't Iran or Hamas, but its own hubris. She's joining us from Jerusalem. Ali Vaez is with us from Washington, D.C., the Iran project director at the International Crisis Group. His latest piece for Time magazine is headlined, The Grim Reality of the Conflict Between Iran and Israel. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Ali, let's begin with you. The significance of the timing of Israel's attack on Iran that seems to be expanding on both sides, right before the U.S. was negotiating with Iran on a nuclear deal in Oman, those talks called off because of this attack. Ali.
Good to be with you. Look, I think Benjamin Netanyahu basically bombed away President Trump's only possibility for a diplomatic win early on in his second term. The reality is that if you look at the three main files that Steve Witkoff, his special envoy for the Middle East, was working on, Gaza, Ukraine and Iran, it was only in the case of Iran that the Iranian leadership shared the political will and the objective of getting a diplomatic settlement, whereas that doesn't apply necessarily to Putin in Russia or Netanyahu when it gets to the Gaza war. But by taking this preemptive strike against Iran, Netanyahu basically ensured that the door to diplomacy is closed for the foreseeable future.
And explain, I mean, the number of nuclear scientists, leadership in Iran who have been killed, the level of, it seems, such almost complete penetration of the Iranian leadership to be able to kill all of these leaders within Iran. Talk about the significance of that. And then the latest we heard of the media reporting, according to various sources, President Trump vetoed killing the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei.
Yeah, look, there is two things could be true at the same time. One is that Israel has deeply penetrated the Iranian system. There is no doubt that the Islamic Republic has serious intelligence loopholes that Israel had used over the years for covert operations, whether they were sabotage of nuclear facilities or assassination of nuclear scientists and IRGC commanders. What's impressive about this round of confrontation between the two countries is that everything is happening at the same time. We're seeing the military attacks by Israel on Iranian territory that happened in 2024, all of these covert operations, a high degree of electronic warfare, cyber warfare, psychological operations, all happening at the same time. But it is also true that the Iranian leadership and bureaucracy and the political elite has deep roots. This is not a non-state actor where when you kill the first two layers of the top brass of the military, for instance, that it will be paralyzed. This is a state, and there are always people in the ranks who are ready to step up and fill those positions. It is also true that Iran's nuclear program has deep roots. It started in the 1950s. So there is not just institutional, but also a high degree of scientific community and knowledge that exists in Iran that cannot be easily bombed away or by assassinating a dozen Iranian nuclear scientists. And most important of all, Amy, is the fact that the sites that matter the most to Israel, where Iran keeps its advanced centrifuges and a stockpile of highly enriched uranium, the site in Fordo, which is under a mountain and highly fortified, have been largely unaffected as a result of these strikes, because Israel does not have the kind of bunker buster weapons that are required to destroy Fordo.
And the significance of the reports that Trump said, don't kill the supreme leader?
So, look, I'm always skeptical of these kind of leaks because it's not clear who leaked it and for what purpose. It might be that President Trump wants to signal to the supreme leader that he is not hostile and play the game of good cop, bad cop, with Israel being the bad cop here. It's also true that it might be an Israeli leak aimed at forcing the hand of President Trump to say that he's not opposed to Israel taking out Iran's supreme leader. He's not the protector of the Ayatollah. So who knows? But the reality is that at the end of the day, from the perspective of the Iranian leadership, it does not matter, because they believe that the United States is complicit in Israel's attacks against Iran and its senior leadership. And they believe the objective of Israeli strikes is not just to degrade Iran's nuclear program, but to destabilize its regime.
I think it's pretty clear also that the U.S. officials said they knew about this attack before it happened. I want to go to Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian speaking during a cabinet meeting in Tehran Sunday about the U.S. position on the attacks on Iran.
Israel knows no boundaries. They entered whatever they want with permission from America. In a conversation that Witkoff had with Dr. Araki, he said that Israel cannot do anything without our permission, meaning this recent strikes is also carried out with America's permission.
And this is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking Sunday.
We are now confronting the two greatest threats to our existence, the Iranian nuclear threat and the threat of Iranian ballistic missiles. We acted at the 12th hour, before Iran could move forward and produce nuclear weapons, and before it could accelerate the development of 10,000 ballistic missiles, the kind that have hit Bet Yam and other places. In 6 years, they could have 20,000. These are external threats, and we are acting to stop them.
I want to bring Orly Noy into this conversation, the editor of the Hebrew language Local Call, chair of the human rights group B'Tselem's executive board, who has that new piece out for 972 headlined, Israel's greatest threat isn't Iran or Hamas, but its own hubris. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Orly. Respond to what is happening right now, what Netanyahu just said, the bombing that's going on. Hundreds of Iranians have been killed, overwhelmingly civilian, and at least 24 Israelis have been killed in Iran's retaliation.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. First, I must say that I am an Israeli citizen, but I'm also of Iranian origin, and I grew up in Iran, and it's really, truly heartbreaking to see the footage that is coming from Iran, as well as from inside Israel. I mean, we are in yet another extremely violent cycle and no one can anticipate where it will get. You asked previously about the timing of this attack, and of course, the Iranian-American negotiations is a huge part of it, but I want to emphasize the local side of the timing of this particular attack. After more than 20 months of a war of annihilation in Gaza, which started with a promise of crushing Hamas and bringing back the hostages, neither which has been achieved, neither of the goals until this point, the Israeli Netanyahu started to lose, he started losing support among the Israeli public for that war. People started finally to question what it is that we are doing there. Finally, after more than a year and a half, footage from Gaza started appearing in the Israeli press with people starving, with people being bombed just for seeking food. And again, no sign of the hostages. Soldiers keep getting killed. So he started to lose support around that. The army, which is almost has the status of a god in Israel, took a very serious a strike to its prestige, not being able to defeat Hamas after such a long time. So both Netanyahu and the Israeli army needed an immediate rehabilitation to their prestige. Now, Netanyahu has been portraying Iran as the ultimate demon for so many years, and now this is the moment where he is enjoying the fruit of this long last campaign, because he gave the Israelis a war which they can be united around it. You can see that today, even Netanyahu's opponents, even the Israeli Jewish opposition, is so taken and so impressed by this brilliant achievement of the army and the unbelievable strike and the technology and whatnot. And all of a sudden, Netanyahu is regaining his prestige. The Israeli army is regaining his prestige. And as per usual, it's only a matter of time until we pay a big enough of a price in death, in devastation, before the Israeli army, the Israeli public will wake up and ask, why did we do that? And how does that war now serve our interests?
Is there questioning even now, as more and more Israelis are killed in the retaliatory attacks, about what Netanyahu, who faces his own corruption trial, as you were saying, and more people are seeing the devastation of Gaza. How popular would you say this move is? And is there an acknowledgement that the what seemed to be the deadline for Netanyahu was the U.S. and Iran agreeing on an Obama-like nuclear deal?
Well, unfortunately, and really I'm saying it with deep sorrow, as for now, he has the support of the majority of the Israeli public. People in Israel are very easy to believe the imaginary threats that Netanyahu uses. And again, Netanyahu used and built up this Iranian demon in the eyes and the minds of the Israeli public for so many years that when now he's telling them, I'm going to shape a new Middle East with no Hezbollah, with no Hamas, with no Palestinian Authority, and with no nuclear Iran, people are applauding. I mean, even some of the most critical journalists that used to, you know, criticize Netanyahu on a daily basis, all of a sudden are praising his courage, his ability to see into the future.
Early, I want to bring Ali Vaez in before he has to leave. And Ali,